Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I am your host, Spencer Wilson. I will be riding solo here most of the show this afternoon. Hopefully, Mr. Sean Cloud can get in here and talk some NFL with me later in the show. He is on some other duties here at the station. We're all very multifaceted here at the station, at the radio station. So he's off doing some other things. We got some fun stuff on the docket today. We will talk, of course, all about Thanksgiving football. We'll talk about some college basketball news, also going into rivalry week with college football. So we'll talk about some of those games as well. Fun time of the year. It's always a fun time of year for sports. But let's talk about what's happening right here at home. The Nevada football team on a 4-game winning streak. The team is now 7-4 overall, and they are playing exceptionally well. This winning streak started in Hawaii, then, of course, beating San Diego State and Colorado State at home, and then at San Jose State last week. And now the big one, the battle for the Fremont Cannon. This is the one. Nevada has had a very good showing in this rivalry game throughout the years. They've dominated, winning 6 of the last 8 meetings, including the last 2 in a row, 45-10 in 2016, and then 23-16 last year. So a lot of confidence going into this game, obviously, on the Nevada Wolfpack side, coming off 4 solid games. I mean, on the road against Hawaii, you never know what's going to happen down there on the island. They went there, their defense took care of business. I mean, their offense has been really good. I feel like their defense has been a little more, I don't want to say that they've been more consistent, I feel like there's just been a little more of solid play coming on the defensive end. Not to say their offense isn't playing well, because they are destroying people. They are doing very, very well on the offensive end. Ganji has control of that offense. He is comfortable in that offense. Norvell is comfortable with him pretty much doing anything in that offense. So it's been a lot of fun to watch these guys work this year, and they've worked their absolute tails off. UNLV is 3-8 this year, 1-6 in conference. Max Gilliam has been handling a majority of the passing duties. He is 123 for 223 for 1,383 yards this season, 14 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So I feel like on the quarterback front, Ganji, he's had games that have been a little bit better than that. I mean, obviously not 1,383 yards in one game, but he has been playing exceptionally well. He's been firing the ball all across the field, so I feel like Ganji can outplay Gilliam there. And then, of course, Lexington Thomas doing a majority of the running duties with 199 carries for just over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. And, of course, it hasn't really been one guy with the Nevada running game this year. It's been a three-headed monster, really, handling the running duties for Nevada, that being Devontae Lee, Kelton Moore, and Toa Taua. And they have done a great job sharing the load between those three guys, and those three guys each bringing their own identity and individuality to that run game makes it even tougher for defenses to stop them. So again, I think that goes into the Pack's favor, and that wide receiver core is just unbelievably structured this year. So I think that offense can go on the road and have a good game. Yeah, Kim, it's probably going to be rowdy, and it's probably going to be loud. I don't really know what UNLV's support has been like this year at home, but I know their splits this year, their home and away splits, they have been better on the road this year than they have been at home. So I think that all plays into the Wolfpack's hands, and it's going to be a lot of fun. A chance to be 8-4 this year, Nevada. 8-4, I believe they'd be 6-2 in conference play. They would also get the Fremont Cannon, winning that for the third straight year, and it would just be an incredible building point off of last season. Of course, we've talked about Norvell having his quarterback and having this offense where he wants it to be this year and really operating, I mean, really at full power. Not to say that they can't play better, because they've had some off quarters and some off halves, which you're going to have throughout the season. It's a matter of fact. But if they can keep those turnovers down in some of these halves and some of these quarters, it can even lead to more success. And I feel like that's the next step for this team. They've proven they can win. Now it's just about cutting down those turnover-prone quarters. They've had some quarters with 2 or 3 turnovers, and it just hurts you. Even if they haven't gone on to lose that game, that just slows down your momentum in a game when you can really just put a stamp on somebody. So I feel like this team has done so much better this year under Norvell, who has felt so much more confident with this team that he's been able to structure and make to his way and his vision. And to be 8-4, possibly, and 6-2 in conference, keeping the Fremont Cannon, I don't think a Mountain West championship game is really in the cards anymore. Fresno State won last week, so they're 6-1 in conference now. So even if Fresno State loses and Nevada wins, they'd both be 6-2 in conference. And I think after that, it goes to head-to-head victories, and Fresno State did beat Nevada this year. But a divisional runner-up spot, keeping the Fremont Cannon blue, getting a bowl game is not a season to be ashamed of, especially with the way that Fresno State has been kind of a Mountain West powerhouse out of the Western Division, Boise State kind of flexing their muscle in the Mountain Division. So no shame in finishing 8-4, keeping the Cannon blue, and finishing behind a very strong Fresno State team on your way to a bowl game. That would just be a great, great season and a great finishing point, exclamation point, for this team this year. But of course, Nevada men's basketball also going on today, or actually over the last couple days, but they have started off their season undefeated at 5-0, and they will play the University of Massachusetts Minutemen today at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. That pregame starting at 6:30. Join John Ramey on the broadcast. And of course, Nevada beat Tulsa yesterday, a nice Thanksgiving treat for all the fans, beating Tulsa 96-86. Jordan Caroline led the way with 25 points, 11 rebounds, and 2 assists. Nevada, the only undefeated team left in the Mountain West Conference this year. Utah State is the next closest team to them at 5-1. The Minutemen of UMass, 4-2 on the year, coming off their own two-game winning streak, beating the University of Arkansas Pine Bluff 74-71, and then beating Howard 68-63. UMass guard Luane Pipkins leads the team with scoring in 17 points per game. I think this is another win for Nevada. It should be another win for Nevada. This team is flexing its muscle. You want to talk about how Norvell's got the football team rolling. You can say the same thing about Musselman and his basketball team. They came out after those two kind of sluggish exhibition games. But that's the reason you have those, to get that out of the system, because now when these games count, these men have been absolutely ready to roll. And they've done great things so far this year, and they've got even bigger tests ahead. Arizona State, USC, a couple teams on the docket before they go into conference play. And right now, kind of a toss-up on how this conference is going to be. How much trust are you going to get, and how much respect are you going to get in terms of strength of schedule and RPI when, I mean, Utah State's, I said, the closest with 5-1. I think the next closest team is 3-2. And if that gap just continues to grow, with Nevada being the only nationally ranked team, I believe they're the only nationally ranked team in the Mountain West Conference, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to really kind of solidify yourself if this conference can't really pick it up and show that they've got some other threats besides Nevada. And if that's not the case, I think that puts a little more pressure on the Wolfpack that they're going to have to really make statements. If these teams aren't as tough, you're going to have to beat them by 15, 20 points and really show them that, hey, they're not that great, but look at how well we're doing against them. We're doing what top teams should do, and we're not letting them stay close to us. And that's the big thing. And that's going to show these committees that even though our conference isn't as strong as other conferences, we're still taking care of business as we should be. And you know what? If they stay 5, 6, 7 throughout the year, that's a 2 or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's a nice-looking spot for Nevada after their last 2 years of having to fight through some 5 seeds, some 6 seeds early in the tournament. They can get a little bit of spacing, really get their confidence up, and you never know what that can do to a team when you need to get hot early in these kinds of tournaments. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to look forward to what they can do in the rest of this Las Vegas Invitational and what they can do the rest of this out-of-conference season, because that's really where they're going to have to make waves. And like I said, USC, Arizona State, a couple other bigger conference schools on the schedule, they have a chance to really cement themselves with that out-of-conference schedule, and if they take care of business in conference, it only makes them look that much better. The women's basketball team got their first win on Sunday, beating Long Beach State on the road 76-67. Team now 1-2 on the year. We said it last week that this team's turnaround point was very, very close. I think this may have been it. Kamaria King led the way with 20 points. Trey Briggs had the most rebounds with 8, and Jade Redmond leading the way with 3 assists. The women's team will now participate in the Nugget Classic starting this afternoon, opening up against Colorado. That'll be on our sister station, 1450 AM, if you want to catch that, or 94.1 FM to check in and see how the women are doing and how Amanda Levins is having that team very sharp in the early going. But now let's get into some other news about Nevada sports. The Nevada rifle team beat nationally ranked Alaska last weekend, winning 4,643-4,641. Nevada taking it by just 2 points. Mitchell Van Patten led the way with a career-high 596 points. Next for the rifle team, they will be in Colorado Springs next weekend for the Winter Air Gun National Team Trials. The swim and dive team finished fourth out of 12 teams last weekend in Houston, finishing with 863 points, finishing behind host Houston, who won the event, then Rice in second and New Mexico in third. Next, the team is off to Boise State for their conference opener on December 8th. The volleyball team finished up their season on the road against Fresno State, 3-0, unfortunately falling to the Bulldogs. Volleyball ends their season with a mark of 8-21. And then, of course, both men's and women's golf and men's and women's tennis still on winter break. But that is where Nevada Wolfpack sports stands. And, of course, as Nevada's season comes to an end, or Nevada's football season this year comes to an end, we can always start to look forward to next year, 2019. And speaking of which, right now is your last chance to win a qualifying spot to tailgate with the pack in 2019. That's right. This is the last qualifying spot. I believe the winner will be drawn this Monday, November 29th. So if you want to be the last person to try to tailgate with the pack in 2019, you get a canopy, a cornhole game, you get two lounging chairs, you get two tailgate parking spots, you get some four game tickets. I mean, you get a whole bunch of stuff with this. And again, the winner will be drawn Monday, and we have one more qualifying spot left. So caller 9 right now at 775-333-0945. You get that final qualifying spot. Caller 9. Right now, when we come back, we're talking NFL. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the program. Black Friday is today, so if you participated in that, I hope you stayed safe, and I also hope you got some great stuff at great low prices. However, what is Black Friday after? Is after Thanksgiving, and on Thanksgiving, what do you have? You have three football games happening all throughout Thanksgiving Day. It's a very nice side dish, if you will, to the holiday of Thanksgiving as a whole. It might not be a side dish, depending on how you see it. I see the holiday as its own thing, and football is a side dish, but whatever. But either way, three fairly entertaining games happening yesterday. We'll start off with the first game, Chicago at Detroit. Oh, goodness. What just an ugly, ugly first half. Really, first quarter. It got a little better into the second half. That scoreless first was just, it was hard to watch, it was hard to listen to. Everything about it just was not overly pleasant. But Chicago took a 9-7 lead into the half, of course, operating with a backup quarterback, Chase. Going into Detroit with their backup quarterback, Chase Daniels, they still played a relatively good game. I thought whenever you have a backup quarterback in there, you're going to lose a little bit of that momentum. Obviously, Trubisky has been having a really solid year this year, so you're going to lose a little momentum. But I thought for the most part, Chase did a really good job of keeping this team in it, keeping them competitive, obviously having a 9-7 lead at the half and then trailing 13-9 at the end of the third quarter. But then the fourth quarter rolled around, and it was pretty much all Chicago, which was just fantastic. Cutting the lead early, just pretty about a minute and a half or so into the fourth quarter, Cohen caught a 14-yard pass from Chase Daniels. That put him up 16-13 defense, then locked it in, just keep him to a field goal about 6 minutes later. Tied it at 16-all. Then Eddie Jackson with that 41-yard six, putting Chicago up 23-16. And really, it's been a team effort with the Bears this year. Their offense, their defense, really working together. Even when one or the other doesn't have as solid of a game, they do a great job of keeping each other in it. So it was great to see that again with Detroit having Chicago having a backup quarterback on the road. And then you go to the afternoon game, Washington-Dallas, which if you came out to Sully's for the first half of that game and spent the first half with us winning some prizes, I hope you had some fun. If not, it's understandable. We missed you out there. But Dallas and Washington, which, again, I feel like all of these games, seeing as how they were all conference or all divisional games, I feel like always has the possibility of being close. Dallas kind of opened up a nice lead. They had a 7-0 lead at the end of one, and then had a 24-13 lead at the end of the third quarter. So you kind of look at that and go, all right, Dallas kind of has this thing locked up. But Washington still managed to make it a relatively exciting game. 31-23 was the final, failing to get a onside kick attempt there in the waning minute. So Dallas holds on to go 6-5 overall, now 4-1 at home this season. Dak had himself a nice game, 22 of 31 for 289 yards and two touchdowns. Elliott had 26 carries, 121 yards, and one touchdown to his name, and Cooper catching both of those touchdowns from Prescott. From Prescott on his eight receptions for 180 yards. So Dallas, now that they have that wideout threat with Amari Cooper, maybe we start to see this team take a little bit better shape. Maybe we start to see this team really become a threat in the NFC. Although with the Rams, with the Saints, I just don't know if that's really going to be a legit threat when you have the Saints and the Rams playing so well. Speaking of the Saints, the Rams are on a bye week, but let's talk about the Saints a little bit. Their game last night at home against Atlanta. Pretty much the one word, or really two words I can think to describe it: solid, consistent. That's really it. They were solid throughout this game, and they were consistent. Not super high scoring like we've seen the Saints do this season, but 31-17, they had a touchdown in all four quarters, followed by a field goal in the second. So their defense and their offense being solid and consistent is what's making this team so dangerous, and I feel like that's what Dallas is missing as being an NFC powerhouse or an NFC contender. Like Chicago, Green Bay, those teams have missed out on being just a little more accurate, I guess, this year. So it was an interesting day. It was a day that saw the teams I think everyone expected to win. I mean, even with a backup quarterback, Chicago's played well this year. Dallas at home, New Orleans at home. I feel like those are the teams that were really expected to win, and they took care of business. Now the question kind of becomes, who's next? Who's next to really take care of business this week? And honestly, I think it's time for Cleveland to separate themselves from this feeling of a last place team. They can do that. They're playing the Bengals this week. And this is a way not only to make a statement in the division, but make a statement for your team, period. Cleveland has won three games this year. I can't tell you, I haven't looked it up, but I don't remember the last time we've been talking about Cleveland like this. They've won a couple games. They could have maybe won one or two more so far this season. And I think this is a very winnable game for them. And this is a team that obviously has been dealing with last place the last 4, 5, 6 years. And they've been dealing with just getting some consistency in their team. And when it comes down to professional football, when you have such a short schedule, consistency is everything. And I feel like Baker is giving them a little bit of consistency. And this game against Cincinnati is a way to show that, hey, we are ready to make that next step. We are ready to get away from this last place feel. We're ready to get away from being the joke of the NFL. And we're ready to start being taken seriously. And if they can beat the Bengals, who are an up and down team, they have their good games, they have their bad games. You really never know what kind of team is going to step out there. But Cleveland seems to be a consistent contender to whoever they're playing. I mean, they've looked pretty much in every game so far this year, maybe minus one or two. But this is a team that is ready to be consistent. This is a team that's ready to be a contender. I said it earlier this month, and I'll say it again. I think within the next two or three seasons, Cleveland could be your AFC North champion in the playoffs and really holding that spot. We got to see where Pittsburgh goes after Roethlisberger. We got to see the future of the Ravens, how that works itself out. Who knows what the Bengals are going to do. If Marvin Lewis stays there, they probably won't do anything relatively noteworthy. Maybe make the playoffs and lose in the wild card round. I don't know. That's what they've been doing. But who, I think it's time for the Browns to really step up. That's the who here. That's who is going to need to really step up next and show that they are ready to move on. Because right now, that's really the team with the biggest ceiling, the biggest biggest place to go is Cleveland. Chiefs and the Rams, both on the bye week. I would hope so. I mean, I don't know if they plan the bye week after these two teams meeting. That's stupid. Of course they did. I don't know what I'm saying. It was a crazy game last Monday night between these two teams. Now, they're both on bye weeks. Who does that favor more? Honestly, I don't think it favors either one more. Both teams still kind of the front runners in their conference. New Orleans would have something to say about that in the NFC. Maybe New England has something to say about that in the AFC, although I feel like if Kansas City and New England meet in the playoffs, the Chiefs are going to get the better of them this time around because they're just going to look at that second half and go, all right, we can compete with this team. We almost beat them at home. We can do this in the playoffs. So I think it's not necessarily who benefits more out of this. It's just how they approach it differently. If you're the Chiefs, it's just about kind of maintaining that confidence. Yeah, it's your second loss of the year, but you're losing to multiple time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots with Brady and Belichick at the helm. And you lost to the Los Angeles Rams, who are arguably, well, along with Kansas City and New Orleans, the best three teams in the NFL this year. So if you're Kansas City, yeah, it was a tough loss. But again, this is a loss that came on the road. You were highly competitive throughout the entire game. Even when the Rams tried to distance themselves a little bit, like they got a 10-13 point lead in Kansas City, quickly reeled them back in. If you're Kansas City, you're not looking at this loss going, man, that really hurt us. You're looking at that going, okay, a few more lessons to take. We cut down the turnovers. I mean, my gosh, Mahomes, I think, had 3 turnovers. Two fumbles, an interception, or 2 interceptions and a fumble. I mean, we've never really seen that from Mahomes in one game this year. We barely saw that through the entire first half of the season from Mahomes. So you take that away from him, you let him settle into that kind of environment a little bit more, and I feel like when he gets to the playoffs, everything's going to be okay. And if you're the Rams, that's a win. So what do? Rein yourself back in. We just beat one of the better teams in the NFL, along with ourselves in New Orleans, and we are proving that no matter what, we can hang with whoever. You have got to stay with us, and we're not going to have any problem staying with you. So if I'm the Rams, it's just don't get too overconfident, don't get too cocky, because most likely it's going to come down to New Orleans and the Rams for the NFC Championship. And we saw how that played out the first time. 45-35 win for New Orleans. So again, if you're the Rams and the Chiefs in this bye week, you kind of take that game as a fighter taking a competitive knockout loss. Listen, we were in it. We traded big blows. They just got that one extra punch in at the end, but they both come back confident and ready to go through the last half of their last 7 or so games of their season. So now let's talk about the MVP. Who is the MVP frontrunner right now? I think for a lot of people, it'd be Drew Brees, and I can understand that. But honestly, I could see Patrick Mahomes throwing his hand in there. I think he has earned it, at least the recognition of it. And I think, really, it could come down to the 3 quarterbacks on those 3 best teams right now. It could come down to Brees, Mahomes, or Goff. And if it was up to me, I think I would have to go Mahomes. This is a guy that is in his first year as a starter, second year in the NFL, but first year as a starter. Obviously, Brees has had his 16, 17, or however many years, 13, 14, 15 years that he's played. Ben Goff is in his second year or so as a starter and really taking the helm of this team and the responsibility of this team. But I think just from what Mahomes has done for the Kansas City Chiefs as a whole and as just a leadership figure, I right now would give it to Mahomes, not only obviously because of that, but obviously because of his on-field stats as well and just how he, not only he started the year, but he kept that momentum going throughout this season so far. But of course, we'll see how it all shapes up. Couple more weeks, about 7 more weeks of the NFL season to go, so I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of chaos to follow. But when we come back, we'll talk a little more about chaos with Rivalry Week on the brink of starting. A lot of college football rivalry games going on. We'll talk about that and some college basketball news as well. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the program. One of the most fun weeks of the college football season takes place this weekend and actually kind of starts tonight. I know the most important rivalry game, well, besides Nevada and UNLV, of course, but the most important rivalry game to me, the Civil War between Oregon and Oregon State, myself being a Duck, looking very much forward to that game happening this afternoon. Actually, it is underway. It started at 1 o'clock, and we're going to see how it goes. Obviously, I got confidence in Oregon. I think they're going to do great. I think they always usually do great. They've only lost one game, I think, in this decade, the 2010s. So I got confidence this team is going to be able to pull it through. It would hurt me dearly if they lost this game. I think it hurts anybody dearly if you lose a rivalry game. But I got confidence Oregon's going to pull this out. But this is one of the best things I think about college football. Because, yes, you have rivalries in professional sports, but I feel like it's really kind of pick and choose on which ones are really personal. Like, Red Sox Yankees, that one feels pretty personal. Giants Dodgers, that one feels pretty personal. Look at Celtics Lakers, that one feels pretty personal. Like there are a few, like obviously there are a lot of rivalries, and those I think are the first 3 that really pop out as like really personal rivalries. Whereas you look at college sports, I feel like every game this week that is a rivalry, because obviously not every game taking place this week is going to be a rivalry game. Oklahoma State happened, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. Michigan State always happens about middle of the season for those 2 teams. But you look at this week and it is pure just respect for your own program. You know, like just your own personal love for your program and not wanting to see them lose to the hated rival. That is something so exclusive to college sports, I feel like, and not just football either. I mean, you look at basketball. Basketball's got some great rivalries. North Carolina Duke on the hardwood is way more personal than North Carolina Duke on the gridiron. So you have those that go back and forth as well, whereas the sport can kind of make it a bigger deal. Take the Iron Bowl, for instance. Auburn-Alabama on the gridiron, way more personal than Auburn-Alabama on the hardwood. So in that case, it goes back and forth, but I feel like college football, just being the passionate sport that it is, the fan-crazed sport that it is, you just can't top it. And like I said, you have the Battle of the Fremont Cannon this weekend, the Civil War happening right now, the Apple Cup between Washington and Washington State happening later tonight. There was a brawl yesterday in the Egg Bowl, which is the game played between Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I think 4 or 5 players were ejected at the end of the third quarter. Mississippi State went on to win that game 35-3. Then you look at some of the other big games. Obviously, the Iron Bowl, Auburn-Alabama. That's a very personal rivalry when it comes to football, and it's one of the biggest highlighted rivalry games of any college football season, primarily because Alabama is usually in a spot to either go to the national championship or be involved in the national championship playoff and going to the SEC championship. And Auburn is either in a case to get to the SEC championship and then a New Year's Six Bowl or possibly getting into the playoffs themselves. So that rivalry game is always looked at. I feel like Michigan-Ohio State is often looked at as well. The game, as it is known by, Michigan ranked 4, Ohio State ranked 10th. This is a big one. I think it's a big one. There's pressure on Urban Meyer, obviously, with the offseason Ohio State had and that just crushing loss they had at Purdue earlier this year where they just got blown off the field. But I feel like there's more pressure on Harbaugh because he is in, I think, his 4th year at Michigan. He hasn't beaten Ohio State once yet. He's 0-3. He hasn't gotten this team to the playoffs. He hasn't even gotten them into the Big Ten championship game yet since he's been there. This is the game that will really determine, I feel, Harbaugh's future at Michigan. Because this whole revenge tour that Michigan has been on so far this year, or the so-called revenge tour that they've been on this year, if they can't beat Ohio State, it means nothing. Because that'll probably knock them out of playoff contention. They're number 4 right now, so they're on that last spot. They'll probably get knocked out if they lose to Ohio State. I would be surprised if they didn't. So I feel like there's more pressure on Harbaugh to keep this team rolling and really solidify themselves as a Big Ten threat this year, because he hasn't been able to do that the last couple years. There's always been one or two slip-ups for this Harbaugh-led Michigan team, and this year they had that one loss against Notre Dame, but that loss not looking too bad right now because Notre Dame is ranked 3rd in the country. So you have a team that's undefeated, that's your only loss this season, so if you can take care of business, beat Ohio State, they're on the road, they're at the horseshoe, so that's going to make it even tougher for this Wolverines team. But if you take care of business on the road, you take care of business in your conference championship game, and you make it to the playoffs, even if they lose in the semifinal, I feel like that is weight lifted off of Harbaugh's shoulders. That's going to buy him a few more years. Of course, he's got local talent, Cade McNamara, going to Michigan. We'll see what kind of role that formulates into with Harbaugh, but he's going to have more time. I feel like if he loses this game against Ohio State, I feel like his time is very close to being up. I don't know when they would pull the trigger, how they would do it. Maybe pull Lane Kiffin and just leave him, not let him get back on the bus. No, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that to Harbaugh. But I feel like if he can't pull off this win against Ohio State, if they don't go undefeated in conference, if they don't win their conference championship game, if they don't get into the playoffs, that's just more and more black marks on that record right now. That's just missing the big check marks. So I feel like there's more pressure on Harbaugh than Meyer in this game. And the crazy thing is, I don't think Michigan's going to win. I think Ohio State at home, still kind of reeling from that loss against Purdue. They almost lost on the road against Maryland last weekend if the quarterback hadn't have completely missed the throw for the winning 2-point conversion, because it was there, but he missed it. So if they had lost that game, I feel like Ohio State's going to come out feeling desperate. Even though they're one loss and number 10 in the country, they're going to feel desperate and try to get this thing back. And if they can beat Michigan and somehow really get into the talks of the college football playoff, I feel like Ohio State's season is really saved, and Meyer can kind of breathe easy, and Harbaugh is just kind of sitting there on the chopping block, and we all just kind of have to wait to see where he goes. But I just don't think Michigan's going to pull this one off. So you have those in-conference rivalry games, then you have the cross-conference rivalry games. A lot of SEC versus ACC, Georgia versus Georgia Tech, Florida versus Florida State, and then, of course, some other Big Ten rivalry games, Maryland-Penn State. You have South Carolina-Clemson in the ACC, Kentucky-Louisville, which I feel like is kind of a interesting rivalry game. The Battle of the Bluegrass State, very cool. Kentucky being ranked for the 15th in the country and being ranked this season for the most part, like for the first time in forever. Kansas State-Iowa State, that's not really a rivalry game. The big game, though, let's start talking about some of these ones. So obviously Alabama-Auburn, that's a big game. Not only because it's one of the more personal bowl games, but Alabama is ranked number one, Auburn unranked. This would be an interesting loss for Alabama, especially if Clemson goes on to beat their rival South Carolina, which Clemson is at home for, and if Notre Dame beats USC on the road. And let's say Michigan beats Ohio State. Then you got a one-loss Alabama team, and where do you put them? Personally, I don't think Alabama's going to lose. But if they do, where do you put them? I think if Clemson takes care of business, they go up to one. Notre Dame takes care of business against USC, they've earned a two spot. And honestly, I think Alabama can go number three. And then if Michigan takes care of business against Ohio State and wins their conference championship, Michigan can be number four. So you would have Clemson taking on Michigan and then Alabama taking on Notre Dame, essentially, in the semifinals. And I feel like that can make some interesting results. Clemson versus Michigan, that would be an interesting one, just from Sweeney and the Harbaugh perspective of having these kind of younger quarterbacks in their conference in his first year, really, in the system of Clemson. Michigan with Shea Patterson being the transfer in his first year there in Harbaugh's system. So I feel like that matchup could really make for some interesting offensive choices. And I think Michigan could edge Clemson out just barely there at the end. Although it would be a long shot, I think, for Michigan to really stay in the game that long with Clemson. But we've seen Syracuse push the Tigers this year. We've seen Clemson on the brink. So I don't think it'd be impossible to think Michigan could beat Clemson and upset number one. And then you got Notre Dame-Alabama, which I feel like would almost play out kind of like the 2012 National Championship did in the Orange Bowl, where Alabama blew them off the field 42-14. I don't think it'd be that bad, but I do think it'd be a two-touchdown win for Alabama, or at least a 10-point win for Alabama, just because I don't think Notre Dame has that real consistency. I know they're 11-0, but they've looked off. They don't always look as sharp as these other undefeated teams, the other nationally ranked top teams. So I feel like Alabama would beat Notre Dame, so essentially setting up Michigan-Alabama in the championship. And yeah, I just don't think there's any stopping Alabama. Even if they do lose to Auburn, I don't think that loss would faze them too much. We've seen what losses do to a Saban team. It just fires them up even more, like a fighter seeing his own blood just goes off. I just don't think there's any stopping Alabama with Saban at the helm. When he gets any kind of young quarterback, he can dig his hands in and just work them to be the image and the quarterback that he wants them to be. So I think regardless of really who's in it, I think it's still Alabama's to lose. We'll see if Tagovailoa can even has to play a whole game this year. We'll see. But I feel like that's really where we're at. But of course, just like Nevada football is not the only thing going on, there's Nevada basketball. Just like college football is now wrapping up, we also have college basketball now starting. We talked a little bit about the Nevada men's basketball team playing at the start of their season, but let's talk about some other national headlines. Most of that being Duke, having those three freshmen come in, blowing Kansas off the floor when Kansas was ranked 2 and Duke was ranked 4th. But we saw Duke lose to Gonzaga. I don't know if you watched it. I watched it. But Duke fell to Gonzaga. Duke was ranked 1. Gonzaga was ranked 3. Duke taking a very tough loss in the final of the Maui Jim Maui Invitational, which has got to be a fun tournament to be at. Just playing football in Maui. Playing basketball in Maui has got to be a lot of fun. Even if you do lose, obviously it sucks to lose. But that was actually the first loss for Duke as well. Coach K had been undefeated in his 5 other trips to the island for the Maui Invitational. But number 3, Gonzaga, able to take that 6th title away from Duke there at the tournament. So we'll see how that reflects in Duke's ranking. I don't think it's going to hurt them that much. I think they're still proving time and time again to be the best team out there. Right now, it's setting up to be a very fun matchup when North Carolina does meet Duke in basketball, with the Tar Heels currently ranked 7th. But let's look at the top 10 real quick. Obviously, Duke number 1, Kansas number 2 coming off that loss against the Blue Devils, but they've looked relatively solid since. Gonzaga at number 3. I have a feeling they might jump up to 2. It's a long shot. I don't think the top 3 is really going to change, even with Gonzaga beating the Blue Devils. And then Virginia at 4. They've had a solid team the last couple of years. They know how to make runs late in the season, how to keep themselves together. Tennessee coming back to a little bit of power at number 5. We talked about Nevada at 6, North Carolina at 7. Auburn at 8, Michigan at 9, and then Kentucky at 10, with Michigan State on the bubble at 11, just outside the top 10 there. So very talented top 10 for men's basketball, and that is the AP top 25. So, of course, a long way to go. We haven't even gotten through pretty much the tournament part of the early part of this season, so there's still a long, long way to go for these teams. But it's looking right now like Duke is everyone's favorite to win the national championship, and it's not hard to see why with those three freshmen playing the way they are. Zion Williamson's basically his own highlight reel every single game. But it'll be interesting to see how they do in conference play when you have Syracuse, when you have North Carolina, when you have Notre Dame and Louisville and these teams that can just come at you from all different directions and make you work. It'll be interesting to see how Duke, first off, how they go into conference play and how they handle conference play, because it's two totally different worlds where you're just going through teams that, you know, fluctuate in talent from maybe a Tulsa to a Kansas or a Gonzaga. You have those kind of differentials. But when you get into conference play, especially the ACC conference in basketball, that's one of the top, arguably the top college basketball conference. So it'll be interesting to see how Duke can manage their way through that and how Coach K keeps these kids, because they look pretty mature already. They seem to be handling themselves pretty well on a national level, but the longer the season goes on, the more scrutiny that can come with that. It'll be interesting to see how Coach K handles all of that. But that's what college sports is so great. Young athletes showing how great they are on national TV. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by talking about the NXT TakeOver events. The last one is in the book, War Games, happening this past weekend. We'll talk about that a little bit. Then we'll go through and rank the matches as they were and how good they were. That's coming up next on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.